like I said, this was a risk reduction intervention for folks who are already HIV infected, so it falls under the rubric of prevention with positives. And I'm going to assume that I don't need to go into a lot of detail explaining what that means. But what I do want to draw your attention to is the second bullet point here. Now that we've developed this thinking about prevention with positives and the role of folks who are already infected, there are explicit guidelines that healthcare providers should be screening and counseling their patients about risky behaviors, especially substance use and risky sex. What isn't talked about is the third bullet point here, is that providers actually have a really hard time doing this. And there's some very real barriers there, the time constraints of the short appointments and everything that they're supposed to cover. A lot of providers haven't received adequate training in how to do behavioral assessments or behavioral counseling. And pretty simply, a lot of them are uncomfortable with the topics. They don't know how to talk to their patients about illicit drug use or risky sexual behaviors. So one of the guiding principles in our office is that we feel that there's a need to support and simplify providers' efforts if we expect these recommendations to have any effect. So that's kind of informed how we've approached this project. And we also have a different take on prevention with positives. We propose that it should be seen or presented as concern for the patient's own health rather than just concern about transmission of HIV. And I think this makes a lot of sense for several reasons. But first, the same behaviors that are associated with transmission of HIV, substance use, or risky sex, also negatively impact or could impact the patient's own health. And by presenting it as concern for the patient's own health, we reduce any potential stigma. We make it much more acceptable, both to patients and their providers. We're not shaking our fingers at anybody, telling them they're bad or they're a vector of disease. And if you take it a step further, we may actually be able to strengthen that patient-provider relationship, and then you could leverage that for better risk reduction counseling. And then finally, our last kind of innovative aspect to this project is we used our video doctor model, and this is something that we've developed over several projects. I like to say that it's like ACASI, but it's more and it's better. Like ACASI, it has a risk assessment on the computer, but it kind of marries the assessment tool and the intervention tool into one smooth, seamless, slick computer program so that we can do an in-depth assessment with all the advantages of ACASI, like better disclosure of sensitive behaviors, the ability to tailor the questions and follow complicated skip patterns. But then it also will seg into our video doctor clips. And what we do with this is similar to the skip logic or the branching is we will draw from a library of digital videos to assemble about 15 minutes of video that is tailored exactly to the patient's risk profile, readiness to change, gender of sex partners, details about the behaviors, whether the drugs they use are injected or not, other things like that. So we can construct what we think is kind of the ideal risk reduction conversation that you'd have with a real provider. Now, I've given you the real abbreviated version. We've written a paper on this. The citation's on the screen, so if you want to read it in more detail, you can look at that. But pulling all of these together, we created Positive Choice, this computer-based program that would do an in-depth risk assessment, deliver tailored risk reduction counseling through our video doctor, would prompt discussions of the risky behavior in the medical appointment. So this is between the real doctor and the patient. We also wanted to become a seamless part of care. We integrated ourselves into the clinics, and we were just one more stop on the visit. You check in at the front desk, you get your vitals, you sit with our computer, you go to the exam room, just one more stop on their visit to the clinic. And we were really mindful throughout this project of not wanting to create any excessive burdens for staff or providers. And I'm going to jump through quickly a couple of the next slides, if it will. There we go, okay. I'm not sure if you can read the flow diagram here, but we tested this in a randomized controlled trial. Every patient completed the in-depth risk assessment. If we didn't detect any risky behaviors, they didn't continue. There was nothing for us to change. If they reported one or more risky behaviors and they were randomized to either intervention or control, our intervention group actually got a three-part intervention. There were the video doctor clips. They got a printed worksheet, which we presented as just educational, helpful, had questions for self-reflection, tips for harm reduction, local resources. And then the provider got a cueing sheet, just a simple one-page sheet that offered an at-a-glance summary of their patient's risk profile, readiness to change, and offered some simple counseling statements. Control group completed the assessment, went on to their appointment as usual, no video doctor, no other intervention. And then we followed folks for 6 months. And we were able to integrate our project into 5 clinics in the San Francisco Bay Area. All patients were eligible, provided they were 18 or older, positive for 3 months or longer and at least conversant in English. And we had some pretty generous incentives here for participation, starting at $40 as a gift card for their baseline session and increasing with each follow-up. And let me just tell you a little bit about the risks that we were looking at with our assessment. We were focusing on risky drinking, illicit drug use, and risky sex. And the way we operationalized it here is, for the drinking, we looked at both binge drinking episodes and quantity of drinks per week. Drug use, we looked at kind of two different ways. It was either any use of hard drugs like crack or speed or heroin, or three or more instances of use of what we called soft drugs. So these would be inhalants, ecstasy, hallucinogens, things like that. We didn't include marijuana as a drug use because we didn't want to potentially conflict with any medicinal use or what their providers may be telling. We have a lot of pot clubs in San Francisco. So. And then finally, sexual risks were operationalized or defined as any unprotected anal or vaginal intercourse. We didn't consider oral sex a risky behavior. And we inquired about sex with a main partner and up to five casual partners. So let's cross our fingers and see if I can play a couple of video clips for you. This is the first one that would play when they finish the risk assessment portion if they're randomized to the intervention. Like I said, this is how it starts, and it really kind of sets the tone for the encounter, and we wanted this to be the kind of ideal conversation you might have with your provider. She stresses that it's confidential, she cares about you, and each one of these short clips is somewhere between 30 and 60 seconds, and when it fades to black, the computer's selecting the next clip, and like I said, it's stringing together whatever you need to see. So some of this is based on what was reported in the risk assessment. Some of it is interactive, and the participants asked to choose an answer or respond to the video doctor. And here's an example of one based on what was reported in the risk assessment. Hopefully we won't wait too long for it to play.
Your answers to the questions indicate that you have recently used speed. People living with HIV often have trouble fighting off infection, maintaining their weight, and managing side effects of medicines like nausea and diarrhea. Using speed can make all these symptoms worse. Speed lowers the body's natural defenses against disease. Also, people who use speed frequently don't eat enough, which causes malnutrition and severe weight loss. The dehydration that comes with the use of speed can make diarrhea and nausea worse. Most important, when people use speed, they may let their guard down. This means they may be more likely to engage in risky behavior like unprotected sex or some other behavior that could result in harm to themselves or someone else.
So I think this is a good example of the way she really frames it as concern for the patient's own health. It isn't until the very end of the clip that she even brings up the idea of harm to other people, doesn't even say transmission or infecting anybody else explicitly. And like I said, there were points where it's interactive, where the participant's responding to questions, or it'll be kind of dynamic as they go through it. Let me just play one final clip here where she gives advice about drug use and sex. I think this was a good example of the way we were able to incorporate harm reduction principles into all our messages. And again, it's all about the patient's own health and concern for the patient. So let me tell you a little bit about our outcomes and what happened when we took it to the clinics. This will forward. We were actually in the field about 3 years, and we screened just over 900 patients, and we found a pretty high prevalence of ongoing risky behaviors. Just over half had at least one of our risky behaviors. Unprotected sex was the most frequent, followed by drug use, and then risky drinking. And we were really pleased that we were able to get high retention for follow-up. At 6 months, we had over 80% retention. Now, when we first looked at these outcomes, we dichotomized each of the risks. We wanted to look at any ongoing risk versus none, so elimination of the risky behavior at 3 and 6 months, among all of the folks who had reported that risky behavior at baseline. And we found actually a significant reduction in ongoing drug use among the intervention group compared to control. And similarly, with sex, we got a significant reduction of sex at both 3 and 6 months. With alcohol, though, we saw similar reductions or elimination of risk in both of the groups at both time points, and it never was significant. We also looked at some continuous measures of change within each of these risk categories. For drug use, we looked at total days of any drug use, because we know that a lot of people use multiple substances, and we were able to get a significant reduction, not at 3 months, but at 6 months, which was kind of interesting in the intervention. I didn't mention before, but they got a booster set of video doctor messages at our 3 month follow-up. But it is interesting that our effects got stronger at 6 months. For meth use, similarly, we had smaller numbers, but we got a significant reduction in days of speed use at both 3 and 6 months compared to control. And we actually weren't able to change condom use much. That was pretty constant, but we were able to get a significant reduction in the number of casual sex partners among folks still having sex. And again, with risky drinking, when we looked at binge drinking episodes, the number of episodes or the quantity of drinks per week, we didn't see much. Everybody reduced their behavior some. It was pretty similar between both groups and at both time points. So none of our alcohol outcomes ever reached significance. So just kind of wrapping it up and summarizing quickly, we had a high prevalence of risky behaviors. We were able to eliminate a significant amount of ongoing drug use and unprotected sex, and we were able to get significant reductions in days of drug use and number of casual sex partners. Now, of course, I've got to talk about our limitations here, if it'll advance. There we go. We've got the usual sort of limitations, potential underlying disclosure biases, since we're talking about sensitive behaviors, but we're pretty confident that we have good validity, since we get better disclosure with some of these high-tech methods than traditional ones. We were unable to assess some behavior change, especially sexual behaviors that may have been risk reduction strategies like serosorting or strategic positioning. That would have still shown up as ongoing risky behavior the way we captured the data. And overall, we saw a decline in risky behavior for everybody, which isn't unexpected in a randomized trial and could be simply attributed to participation in research or the Hawthorne effect. And we were unable to determine which part of our intervention had the greatest effect. Was it the video doctor clips, the in-person counseling, the worksheet that they got? But we know that the combination, the three pieces together, did work. And just want to kind of recall our innovative aspects here, that we reframed this as concern for the patient's own health rather than the threat of transmission. We were able to address multiple risky behaviors. We used multimedia, high-tech computer technology. We felt we were successful at simplifying and supporting the provider's role, and we were able to integrate ourselves as a seamless part of care. All right, this really is tough. So I just want to acknowledge the patients, the medical providers, the clinic staff who participated in our study, acknowledge our research team and the research assistants, and just point out that we were funded by a grant from NIDA. And I'm going to end with another little screen grab from the video doctor. And if you'd like any more information, or I'll be glad to take questions, but also I'd encourage you to visit our website, ucsf.edu/chips, where you can find out more details about our project, and be on the lookout. Our results have been submitted for publication, and you should be seeing them soon. Thank you. That's it.